This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 718, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you. iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 718. I am Joshua A. Flanagan, Esquire. Not true. And this is my co-host, Connor Theodore Kilpatrick, which I also know to not be true.
Hello.
You know what's funny is I know what your middle initial is, but I cannot for the life of me think of what the name is now. And you don't have to say, because otherwise they're all going to try to crack your passwords.
That's right. All my passwords are just my middle name.
Well, no, but every little bit of information, I feel like. Every time I say anything more personal than what I say, I think, well, that's it. Somebody's going to hack me now.
That's not unreasonable.
No. Like, you know, my mailbox is white, you know. that's whatever middle thing, you know. Like, well, my house has four bedrooms. Oh, well, that's more information. You don't know.
Right. You painted your rooms red?
Huh?
You painted your rooms red?
No. No. When did I say that?
You just said I have four red rooms in my house.
Bedrooms.
Oh, bedrooms.
I like it. You think that downstairs I have like interrogation rooms and a situation room.
Yeah.
And no, bedrooms.
I assume you have a situation room. It's where you just go to be by yourself.
Also, you spelled your own last name wrong.
Did I? Yeah, I did. I missed a letter.
Yes, you did. Yeah. Nice work.
It was late.
We are iFanboy. And every week we read our stack of comics and one of us picks their favorite book. We call that the pick of the week. Judging by the last 6 weeks or so, I don't know how long we're going to keep doing this. I don't know that they're going to keep making comics. It seems like they're slowing down the operation.
It was another light week. Yeah, it was weird.
So we're going to talk about the pick of the week, which goes to Connor this week. We'll talk about the other comics, the patron pick, some listener mail if we have time, and it'll be a rollicking good stomper. Your spoiler warning is that there are spoilers, because we're going to talk about what happens in the books. So that's on you. Connor, go for it.
The pick of the week was Hawkeye Freefall number 3, Matthew Rosenberg, Otto Schmidt, Joe Sabina, which is funny because I was just criticizing Hawkeye and Thor, which we're going to talk about next, 2 weeks ago when these books came out. Actually, I don't, just to back up, it was a light week, but there was a couple of books I really liked, so I would have had no problem making the pick. So it was a good week of comics. But Hawkeye Freefall, I read right after Thor. I loved Thor. I thought Thor might be the pick, but Hawkeye Freefall ended up doing it. Again, this is all Clint Barton character assassination. However, it's very entertaining. This had like sort of a screwball comedy vibe to it with Hawkeye's little hacker pal constantly screwing up his relationship and finally, I think, blowing it up. I also just really love Otto Schmidt. I really love his style. It's got cartooniness to it, but it lives in the Venn diagram between cartoony and realistic, and I really love it.
No, you're right. Like the anatomy, the perspective, you know, the storytelling, it's all spot on. But then sort of the facial expressions, you know, there's just that element of looseness and humor. But, you know, you can go the other way. If you look at the last page,
it's great.
You know, that's all gone.
Yeah.
Everything has weight. You're right. He's a damn good artist.
He's really good. He's one of my favorite new people to come around in a while.
He's probably like, I've been drawing for 15 years.
Sorry, Otto. So in this issue, we had the big cliffhanger last time was that it was revealed that Hawkeye was, in fact, also Ronin, the one committing all the crimes that people are looking for. We're told how he has a device that allows him to go forward in time an hour, which you can't think about too much, as with all time travel, so that he can be at two places at once for a little while. And that's how he's been robbing supervillains as Ronin, but also having an alibi as himself, which I'm fine with. It's a Flibberty Gibbet. It's a device. It doesn't really matter. None of this works anyway. I just loved the whole beginning bit with Night Nurse coming home and that blowing up in Clint's face. There's a little bit of the hood. And then I thought the stuff with Natasha was terrific. They have a great history and relationship.
Yeah, that was good.
And then there's another interesting cliffhanger at the end after some more comedy in the middle with the assistant and Night Nurse. And the return of the Hawkeye censor face.
It's funny because that you'd mentioned, you know, the character assassination of Hawkeye was the same thing. I was like, I recognize that that's very funny, but also I hate it. Like it is, it's equal measure. You know, it's like I'm trying to think. You know, like I hate social media. It's awful. It's destroying us all. But there are good things about it. There's things that make me happy about it, and that's how I feel about this version of Hawkeye. I think I was upset that she broke up with him.
Yeah.
That Night Nurse broke up with him. I actually thought, well, that's a good couple because she's no slouch at all. And you know, that's this sort of the character's history, is that he keeps getting involved with incredibly competent women, women who are smarter and more competent than him, you know? Mm-hmm. And then you're always like, why do they put up with his shit? And then it turns out they don't, which I guess is sort of the ongoing story with that. They certainly shouldn't put up with those glasses.
It was an unusual and interesting pairing.
Yeah.
Even if her bangs kept changing shape. But, yeah, I mean, plus you don't get a lot of Night Nurse. I don't know much about her. So it was fun to kind of have this new couple thing. And who knows, you know.
Yeah.
This is Clint Barton's lot in life. There was a funny bit where, in the beginning, the assistant guy's like, your girlfriend's coming over? Is it Tiger? Is it, like, he listed all the people. Like, is it,
yeah.
There's a whole bunch of different, you know, Avenger women that he's dated in the past. So.
Sure. And what's funny is that, you know, it's not good for his character, but he just kind of like, well, there's another one, you know, like he's been through this. He recognizes his shortcomings, which makes him behave worse. I think
it's
dug that.
Because he paints the room purple in his house, which is tough.
That, and he carries around a little cardboard cutout of his face that he wears like a loincloth. Or wait, you're saying that wasn't really there?
Yes.
Oh.
So I did think it was funny that he stole a life model decoy of himself from S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And then that life model decoy fucked up his life.
It's the same visual gag as the one in Jimmy Olsen.
Which came from Fraction's original run on Hawkeye.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Remember that? This is where the gag came from.
Oh, I don't remember that, but that's fine.
There was a naked fight scene and they kept covering his bits up with Hawkeye's face.
No, that part. But no, I mean like the dead...
Life model decoy. Yeah.
Or like opens up a box and there's a naked version of the character in there. So Fraction did that with Jimmy Olsen,
right,
and they
right,
shot
right,
it.
Right.
And then there's the, anyway.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's like that's a zeitgeist thing now. It's a replacement body.
I just thought this did a really good job of weaving in really funny scenes, but the ending was really kind of shocking and dramatic, and it didn't feel jarring. The Otto Schmidt art is terrific. And again, as we talked about, there's a great cliffhanger in which another hero shows up at the end in his Netflix costume.
Is he doing that?
That's what he's wearing in his regular book right now, yeah. Remember, because he's not Daredevil. Oh, spoiler.
Yeah, but he's Daredevil.
Right. I think this is great. When I see this book's out, I'm really excited to see it, despite, again, how I talked about it last time. I wish they would give him a little bit of growth, and we got a little bit away from the Matt Fraction characterization, but... In the meantime, it's a really entertaining book, which is the weird line we walk as longtime comics readers.
Well, to be fair, I would say that we have adopted a stance on these that other people should. There's too many hardliners, and we are hardline about some things.
Sure.
But, you know, like you can say, I hate what they're doing with all this, but I really like this at the same time. And those things can exist in the same place. And
you have to recognize the craft level.
Sure.
The craft level is really high.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you're right. No, it's kind of everything you want out of a Marvel comic book. It's fun and funny and good looking and suspenseful and romantic and it's a lot of things at once. I think that's one of the things that's great about Hawkeye, always has been. Even though this character isn't exactly the same version, there's definitely not nothing of the old one. It's not, you know, I said this before, it's not Jeremy Renner.
Right.
You know?
And also just one more thing on the art is, you know, we've talked about this a lot in an era in which a lot of artists are working on a lot of books that they maybe aren't ready for, when it's a complete package like this that looks great, with this being really well written, it really does stand out on the stands.
Hold on to your butts for issue 7 is my guess. This is Bill. He sent in a packet last week.
It's Bill from marketing.
Bill Roseman, is he still there?
It's just a bunch of ads. I read Thor number 3 right before Hawkeye, and I was like, wow, that was really great. That could be the pick of the week.
You know, I'm surprised to hear you say that, not because I didn't like it. You're sort of up and down with Thor, and
all I said last time was...
I mean in general.
Oh, no, I wouldn't say that.
Over the past few years, you know, you're
the only thing about that was it was a general protest against Marvel's policy of getting rid of all the original heroes. That was the only reason why I was down on Thor. I was down on every core Marvel book at the time, which we'll come back around to in about a year with DC. We talked about last time, the only thing about Thor that was negative was we talked about this Donny Cates using the same group of characters in all the books he writes. Mm-hmm. And that was the only negative was I started to see that, not that it was necessarily executed badly.
Yeah, but I feel like they all do that. Like they all sort of, that's the thing that started happening. I mean, it probably happened in the 60s, but really in the past 10 years or so, I almost think like Bendis sort of ushered this in at Marvel, at least, where, you know, he's like, I'm going to bring these sort of, they'll find B and C characters to sort of bring into the book, and then they hang with those guys. So the, you know, the positive part of that is they tend to be really consistent and they, you know, build some character. And so you get used to them. And you know, to be frank, Beta Ray Bill as a character is, you know, it's part of the canon for sure, but he's pretty much underused. He doesn't have much character that I could think of one way or the other. And so in this, at least, you know, we spend time with him.
Right.
And then also the other added benefit is the writer has an affection for them. If they keep bringing this sort of character back, they get treated well. It makes them more interesting, I guess. I see what you're saying.
We talked about it last time. Yeah. I want to have the conversation again. But this issue was basically one long fight scene between two brothers. Beta Ray Bill is sort of a...
Yeah.
Stepbrother to, not even stepbrother, but sort of an adopted brother to Thor. And he shows up and says, hey, what are you doing being Galactus's herald? And they fight. And it was a terrific, you know, issue-long fight scene. And I really am impressed with Nick Klein. I mean, we've always liked him.
Yeah, you're not really wrong.
Good. And I thought this was an art tour de force. And it's just these two titans, you know, knocking each other around with hammers and fists and, you know, through things, and things blow up. And this, but it's also emotional because they are... basically brothers, and there's a lot of sadness behind it.
Yeah, it really is. It was actually a little difficult to don't let this happen. Why are you doing this? You know, there's all sorts of reasons, and I think there's a big heavy is the crown kind of thing that's going on with Thor right now as he tries to sort of work it out. And also, if you think about, you know, his relationship with Odin forever has been fraught because Odin was always kind of a dick, and so we're like, well, isn't that mean that Thor is going to turn into a dick now? Because he has to, because he's in charge, and that maybe that's it. Maybe that, you know, so that all works together. And let's not over, you know, destroying Stormbreaker is kind of a big deal.
Yeah.
In terms of, you know, how Marvel goes. And then I thought the last page was fantastic.
Yeah, this is great. I actually like this Thor costume he's got going on.
I don't, but it's fine.
You loved the last one.
I did. I like that it was closely related to what came before. Nothing beats the first one. Those damn boots are amazing. And
there's a little flashback to it at the beginning, which is great because you haven't seen that in forever. If you can't use that one, I don't mind this one. There's a page where I was looking, I was like, oh, this isn't too bad because it's not too far off. It's sort of a mix between what came before and some new elements. It's not too far off. But this was just a really exciting, really well-drawn, real-colored. I mean, Nick Klein and Matthew Wilson are a terrific combo here. Again, you know, who knows how long this can be drawn by Nick Klein, because it's an every other week book too. But in the meantime, it's great. All these characters are sort of like, they're big.
Yeah, I was actually having that exact thought. That was going to be the next point. I know that I had mentioned weight in Otto Schmidt's art, but it's even more in evidence here.
It's like when Russell Crowe talked about doing Gladiator, when he said he didn't want to be like super lean and fit. He wanted to be big.
Yeah.
Have weight to him. He wanted to have big arms and big shoulders. Like Thor and Beta Ray Bill are both like, I don't want to say stocky.
Bulky.
They're bulky. They're not muscle-bound bulky. They're just sort of like, I'm a big guy.
And even Sif, on that last page, it's actually really interesting if you look at her. If you think about how a lot of the female characters are drawn a lot, you know, it's like the flat, almost concave stomach and the huge chest or whatever. And, you know, this is, much more along the sort of when Wonder Woman is bad. Wonder Woman is taller, but she actually looks a little, again, not stocky or squat, but just, you know, built powerful.
Warrior, yeah.
Yeah, and they didn't, you know, her arm is covering up where her boobs would be so that you don't have that.
Well, no, her boobs are right above the arm.
Well, whatever, but it's not, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, with no, it's not a sexy pose. It's she's
right. She looks like a warrior, and yeah. And that's awesome. And you know, you look how big and bulky Beta Ray Bill looks, you know, behind her. I dig it. It's really, you're right, really great art through the whole thing. Very Thor appropriate, too.
Yeah, I don't know that Thor is totally happy with what's going on, but he also, it's the thing, like, I'm in charge. I see the big picture. You don't see it. Chill out. Okay, you're not chilling out. I still have to do this, so we're going to have to fight because you won't let up. It was a good story and a good fight.
Yeah.
So this is a good week for me when Thor and Hawkeye come out because they're both terrific.
Yeah, that's true. That's kind of cool. Next up, Alienated number one. We talked a little about trying new stuff out last week, and we do. And you had mentioned you were going to try. This is from Boom Studios, written by Simon Spurrier, with pencils by Chris Wildgoose, which, you know, watch out, Wade Von Graubadger. You've got...
I saw this on the list for Boom, and Chris Wildgoose's art was the draw.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's terrific. He's done some... The last thing I read by him, I think it was a YA DC book. But he's a terrific cartoonist. I saw the premise. I thought that might be interesting, so I gave it a shot. This is a story of three teenagers, all of whom are named Sam in some way. Samuel, Samantha
Samir, Samuel, and Samir. Yep.
Who, on their way to school, walking, not together, but in the same vicinity, because they're all sort of loners or lonely, discover an alien artifact, which they touch, and it links them all psychically.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another character who's kind of the dick at the school who ends up getting
Leon. Involved.
I thought this was interesting. I love the art. I love Chris Wildgoose, but
yep.
I think the downside for me was it felt a little inauthentic in terms of teenagers. And I'm not an expert on teenagers,
well,
how they speak, but it felt a little like middle-aged guy writing teenagers.
Also British.
Yeah.
And I was actually, I was like, this has to be in America. So you've got...
Yes.
A British guy, I don't know how old he is. I'm positive he's younger than us. You know, and he's doing this thing. And it did feel a little what's the word I want to say? Like the kids were not terribly nuanced.
And they were very smart and introspective. And that's not saying that kids can't be smart and introspective, but it's just like they were having discussions about their feelings and about their issues. And I was like, these kids sound like they've all been through years of therapy.
You know, if I was to counter that, though, I would say that...
This isn't unusual, though, in fiction.
No, but also a lot of that was actually inner monologue. So it's stuff that they were thinking about, which they may not necessarily voice or be able to voice, but in this context, like you've got somebody else there on your inner thoughts, things that you might not say, things that if you were to say them out loud, they wouldn't come out the same way. Like I can kind of get that.
Mm-hmm.
Although they were talking at each other that way, whatever. You know, the people in fiction are, I know what you're saying.
It wasn't a deal breaker. I just thought.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
And then I read Hawkeye like soon after, and Hawkeye, even though they're not young characters, feels more like authentically young. And so I was like, oh, it wasn't a huge problem.
So... I was like, oh, what's your rating? But I went back and forth with this, is that I kind of liked it. And then I was kind of like, yeah. And then I like, there were things to like in here. I'm not a giant Cy Spurrier fan, but I feel like he is one of those guys who I've seen around a lot for quite a few years now. And he's getting better. Reminds me a lot of Kieran Gillen in that way, where at first what he was doing was really esoteric and kind of you had to work to sort of get it. And it kind of wasn't worth the work.
Right.
But over the years, you know, his style got chiseled down and he became more clear, you know, in the same way that Kieran, you know, he does, you know, some Marvel stuff. He's done DC stuff. He's getting better at it. He's getting to be a better comic writer so he can focus those ideas that he has a little more. And I thought that was on pretty good display here. It is really something to say that I know all the characters' names.
Right.
I know these are the three Sams, but I remembered what they each were. I remembered the guy was Leon. That never happens with us. And I thought, well, then you're doing something right there. And by making the characters so... clear, like they really hammered down on who Samir was and how he acts, so you know, although it wasn't super clear to me that he was gay, like they didn't say it, they hinted at it a lot, and so by the end, but that's also possible that I missed a thing. You know what it was? Everybody was a stereotype to a certain extent. Like the Leon kid is a stereotype so that you can get a hold of what's going on,
right?
And then later you can sort of
reveal layers to them.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of what was happening here.
I didn't love it, but I liked it enough. I think the premise is interesting. to have these three characters who are clearly disaffected from their lives. You know, the one kid is doing conspiracy YouTube videos. The other girl is just wants out of there because she just her life will be better once she gets to college. And that's a very common, you know, feeling.
Also, 1,000% true if you're that person.
Absolutely. And then Samir, who's outwardly one way but inwardly another. And now they're all in each other's heads. I almost don't even need the ending with the little alien being showing up. You know, I think the setup is interesting enough. I get it. It's got to be a sci-fi book. You can't just do another.
And I actually didn't have a problem with the sci-fi element of linking them together.
No, that's what I mean. I think that part's it's almost like The Greatest American Hero, where like the alien shows up, gives them the powers, and leaves.
Yeah.
And the story's about what happens next. Like, I don't need the alien necessarily to be around, but I get it.
I guess the other, I don't know if it's a criticism, but what I did think is like, boy, they got used to this awful quick.
Yeah. Yeah.
But again, that just gets you where you're going. And I understand there's an economy that needs to take place in this stuff, and it's not real life, and I don't want to spend forever watching them be upset about it. They're going to accept it eventually. We're reading a story. Let them accept it, and we'll move on with the thing. Also, this is terrifying. It's really scary. I know that I've said I don't like horror books. This is horrific.
Somebody being in your head?
Two people, but yeah, really. Like
hearing your thoughts and you hearing their thoughts?
Oh, God. I mean, just think about all the things that you think during the day, just passing things. You're like, well, I'm awful. And then it goes, you know, and you're not. It's not something you would act on, but you can't control what your subconscious does. And so somebody's, you know, listening to you and judging, you know, based on that. And it's like the most vulnerable you could possibly be. That is terrifying.
So I'm going to read more.
Yeah.
I'll give it a couple at least to see if the premise is explored in an interesting way. But I did like it. It does help. The cartooning was great, I thought.
It was great. There were bits where they were switching between the people, like at the end of the page. Mm-hmm. Like they introduced Samantha and Samuel at the end of their introduction. And I found that it was like, who am I looking at? I figured it out. Mm-hmm. But there's just some mechanical things that I thought could have been a little bit better. But again, that's compared to what's the sort of stuff that Cyberia used to do. It's still pretty clear, and I think they got it all together, so it's not a big complaint. But it was just an interesting way to do things.
Did you think that the prank YouTuber they were all watching? Did you think the prank was kind of stupid?
I thought it was overblown.
Yeah,
wouldn't do that, and you wouldn't videotape it, and you wouldn't put it like it was too much. That said, my son watches horrific, horrible YouTube videos.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, like, the payoff of it was kind of like, that's it?
Yeah, no, but the thing that strikes me is that, like, some of them are very, very wealthy, and they can pull off things that are of a bigger magnitude than you would think possible.
Oh, no, I definitely know that, but...
Yeah, I didn't.
I just thought that the payoff of the prank was, like, that's all you're doing?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I don't understand at all. It's stupid.
Yeah.
Even though I do. Let's talk about Superman Heroes, number one. Bendis and Fraction and Rucka with a bunch of artists and colorists and letterers.
You know what's funny is that this book, I was like, DC doesn't do a book like this. Marvel does books like this. And I looked at all the guys and I was like, yeah, it's a Marvel book.
So you've got Kevin Maguire, Mike Perkins, Steve Mike Lieber, Perkins. Mike Norton, and Scott Godlewski doing an issue in which we look at some of the other people's reaction to Superman revealing himself, which is supposedly the idea of the book, but then it opens up with the Superman flashback, and there's more Superman, and then it's like forever until we finally get to other characters in the book. Mm-hmm. It's 10 pages in before we see anybody else. My feelings on this are very much along the lines of what we talked about before, is that it's interesting right now, but I'm on Team Batman that this is a terrible idea.
I gotta say, yes, I really liked what they did with Batman. Mm-hmm. Though with Diana, just keep like, yeah, but what is it? You know, and then he finally sort of comes out with it, and it's, you know, it's envy. Yeah. And it's not envy of his power, but what the power affords him. Mm-hmm. And you've got a person here who, you know, in any other context, he's billionaire. He can do everything, you know, but he's not that person. So he doesn't get that sort of freedom that goes along with it because of his drive to do. I thought that was a very different Bruce Wayne scene, but also didn't feel like it was out of character. Mm-hmm. So I liked that bit. You've ruined Kevin Maguire for me completely.
Why?
I don't know. Because you used to love him. And now you're like, well, every time he shows up, it's got this sort of problem. And that's all I can see. There's that first sort of spread of...
The first two-page spread is awful.
It's awful. He looks like he's got a goiter.
It's the coloring, 100%. there's one, two, three, four colors in this book, and I really, it changes depending on who's coloring, because I cannot believe that the person who colored that two-page spread of Superman flying is the same one that colored the page of the Justice League, because it's a totally different color scheme. It's not nearly as awful. But it's the same thing we talked about on our Booksplode, where you over-color someone who needs a flatter color style.
Yeah.
And he needs a flatter color style. Let's talk again about another two-page spread of the Justice League, shall we? So Superman flies to the Hall of Justice to tell them, I guess it's the same scene as before, although there's no table now.
Do you think there's that many of those people there normally? Like, if you walk in on a given day, or is there like 35 superheroes hanging out?
According to the old Tim vs. Cartoon Show, yes, but I believe here, he says, I called all the Justice League together.
So got it.
He put the call in and they came. I love that some artists just say, fuck it, and you've got classic Flash costume. Mm-hmm. You have classic Satana costume, who has not looked like that since New 52, which is now 9 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is like all over the place once again in terms of how people look. And then, as you noted to me in a text message, fucking Harley Quinn, and also Duke is there.
At least they put her in the back this time, and she wasn't in the classic Bendis testimonial grid. At least.
I think it's funny that she's in the back along with Simon. Is it Simon, the other Green Lantern? Because he has been totally put to the back. Now it's Jessica Cruz is up in the front with Jon Stewart. Her partner has been hardly anywhere, and so now he's in the back with Harley Quinn. But who is the woman next to Flash, the blonde woman who looks like she's wearing Flash pants, behind Robin?
Who's the kid?
I think that's the Dial H for Hero kid. Does she have her hand he's on in the Justice Flash's League? Arm? I don't know. I don't know.
She either has her hand on the Flash's arm or she's about to ask a question.
Point of order.
And then you've got the Booster Gold leaning on Blue Beetle over in the corner, which, you know, if anybody's allowed to sort of make that, it's Kevin Maguire, and I'm fine with that.
What happened to Booster Gold after Heroes in Crisis? I don't even remember.
I don't know. You can just ignore it.
I am.
It's fine. That story was fun to read. Just, you know, move it away from everything. He's hanging out in Machu Picchu, which is, it's, by the way, the most fun place name to say in the history of time, Machu Picchu. And I like that. What is it? It's only two pages, I think. Three pages.
Of the heads?
No, Booster Gold and Superman, the sort of next bit.
Yeah.
He just yells out Clark Kent like Ricola. It's only two pages. You know, that hit me. Like, you forget he knows everything. He's from the future.
The implications of this is bad. It's all bad.
I know. I understand. I like the idea behind the thing with the teacher.
Yeah.
But I didn't really buy it. It was a lot of pages for a thing like, you really helped me. And I have teachers like that I feel that way. But it sounded like he put him up like right next to the reason I'm here is because of you. You know, like, no, he's not Pa Kent. It's not the same thing.
Right.
I did like the bit where he got a C+ or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, that was interesting. Yeah. Let's see.
Isn't the name McKay the same name of the character in Kingdom Come?
I don't know.
I feel like it is. And he looks just like him. So I was very confused for a second. I thought it was the old man from Kingdom Come. This was entertaining. The Godlewski art and that was good. And there's the Jimmy Olsen scene with Steve Lieber, which was good.
Really good.
But also, I don't buy that Jimmy knew the whole time. Like, I'm not buying any of this.
I agree with what you just said, but I did think it was very good cartoon. I mean, like, who else can draw the passive aggressive? I'm fine. For like six pages and not have that suck.
Yeah.
And also, Superman is always the high-status character in any scene, and he really wants Jimmy's approval here.
Yes.
You know, and he's like, so we're good? We all right? Like, he really cares, and that is so human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's sort of the value of Jimmy Olsen, I think.
Yeah.
So that was really good.
Again, all of these things are entertaining in their own bubble, but I don't buy it, and I think it's all bad.
So did you enjoy it?
Yeah, I did. Again, because it's entertaining, but like just the implications of it. I like secret identities. Mm-hmm. I think they're important. I don't think this is a good idea. There was another issue this week, Superman, which also dealt with the fallout of this from the rival paper's perspective. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's a good idea.
The end of that, I was like, Lana Lang? Come on. That's not, she's, no. I'm not, I don't even want to talk about the issue or anything, but I don't like that. Yeah, you're right.
It overshadows everything. As we've seen, and then maybe that's part of the story they want to tell, is that, you know, he can't do anything because everyone wants to talk to him about his secret identity or his real life.
You know, devil's advocate, if I'm saying, well, how can I update these characters? How can I feel like I'm making them relevant again? How can I not keep doing the same things over again? Then you shift the status quo. And obviously, if you're, you know, a longtime reader and you had no problem with the status quo, then it doesn't feel good. Mm-hmm. but I don't know. Like, they're trying to do something.
No, I understand why. Nobody wants to write these characters anymore, apparently.
Right.
The first go-to thing for all these writers is to get rid of either the identity or change who it is behind the mask or something.
Well, I'll tell you what nobody seems to have figured out is they keep having them fight the same villain over and over and over and over again. So the end of this whole thing is, oh, we're going against Lex. Like, Batman cannot get away from Joker. Like, they should put a moratorium on these characters. Mm-hmm. You know, well, maybe not Lex Luthor. I think Lex Luthor's sort of part of the whole thing is sort of, it's almost like a supporting character than a villain. I like him better when he's like that, which is just sort of how he is in the Jimmy Olsen book.
Right.
You know, he's part of the cast.
He's there, but he's not the main focus.
Right. But I really feel like they're always, always going up against their arch enemy in everything. You know, like, if you think about it, you've got Kingpin is in every book. Galactus is in every book. Norman Osborn's in most of the book. Doctor Doom is in every book. Like, it's all focused on the big villains. And it feels like it's all set up for, like, whenever the next movie is, they're going to make sure they have that character in it.
Right.
But it's all superstar. You're never going to the bench.
And the bench is deep.
And it's, yeah. And the superstar is boring. Because we've seen it so much. It has no... that last page doesn't mean anything anymore.
Right, and it's the same thing they did with Doomsday. You know, for a while, he would show up every couple of years, and it's just like, well, I don't care anymore.
Yeah.
You stuck with Marvel's X, which I did not.
I did. Yeah, and I know you didn't really dig it.
No, I thought it was fine, and I thought I might stick with it if I liked it, but I also liked it as a one sort of issue story that was fine.
This is a little more into the world that we go into. I enjoyed it, just straight up. I think the art was actually really good again.
Yeah.
This is an Elseworlds kind of deal, basically. The whole world has gotten superpowers, and it's sort of it's fucked everything up.
It's the prelude to Earth-X.
Yeah, and the kid gets picked up by a trucker, and we're like, who's that guy? Mm-hmm. Would you like to make a guess who that guy is?
The guy with the flame tattoos.
Yeah, right? So that's a clue.
Is it like Damien Helmstrom or something?
He's Ghost Rider.
Oh, all right. That's less
exciting. So they start to go through the Lincoln Tunnel, and he's like, it's going to be bad in here. And no matter what you do, don't get out of the truck. You'll be completely safe. But it's going to be bad in here. And it is. And then he turns into Ghost Rider and the thing, you know, the truck goes. But then the kid's like, fuck this. And he bolts because he doesn't really know who Ghost Rider is.
Right.
And then Daredevil goes to is sort of, basically, I think Ghost Rider calls. He calls out. He goes, hey, ears. And so that's like mysterious, you know, who he's talking to. And you find out that it's Daredevil. Keep an eye on this kid. He's a good kid or whatever. So you find out that Daredevil gets Spider-Man to go sort of pick him up and take care of him. And Spider-Man is destroyed. He's like a wrecked, not version, you know, Peter Parker after he's lost his hope. He's got a daughter. He's got May Parker.
Yeah.
But
that was from Earth-X. Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Jane's dead. And he's just, you know, and Daredevil's trying to convince him to, you know, keep doing the right thing again and sort of get him back.
So it, you're enjoying it. Because one of the things we're talking about the not loving Earth-X. Except for the
I don't
art.
Remember
Earth-X. The only thing I remember from Earth-X is the Jean-Paul Leon art.
Right. I do know that that was a long time ago and I was a different reader.
Yeah.
And so if I just read this on its own, like it's a, you know, so far it's a interesting little Elseworlds-y kind of tale of, you know, how the world could have gone or whatever.
All right. Maybe I'll look at it again.
Yeah. I liked it.
All right. Fine. Don't twist my arm.
It's not, you know, it's not beating sliced bread, but.
I learned it from watching you, Josh.
Oh. People, I hear it a lot, but I'm like, people can't possibly remember that.
Parents who do drugs have children who do drugs.
I guess. And then you got Rachel Lee Cook smashing eggs with a frying
that
pan.
That was a different reaction I had to that.
Before she runs over a kid. It's a whole thing.
Now when everyone cracks eggs, I get really aroused. I don't know why.
Oh, I want to thank the patrons who help support this show and the stuff we do over at patreon.com/ifanboy. You can go be part of that. I feel like we keep talking about this stretch. Maybe we should change the stretch goal. Maybe you don't want this stretch goal. Is that it? You don't want it? Fine. But actually what it is if the next stretch goal is we're going to add a monthly non-comics media podcast through the era that the goal is met. And then if you don't keep meeting, we won't keep doing it. There it is. You got to have consequences.
Yeah.
And we will do our best to upload as many of the missing full-length shows and minis from our old video show days to our YouTube channel and re-embed them on the website. And I'm trying not to think about what it would be like if we had done the video show a few years later. When
YouTube era? I think what we should do is the new stretch goal should be you will do unhinged conspiracy videos on YouTube.
Do I get to wear a mask and like a voice a voice transformer? Maybe. I mean, it'll say my name.
You'll introduce yourself as Josh Flanagan, but you'll be wearing a voice. Absolutely.
I feel like I have four bedrooms.
My name is Josh. We're going to talk about fluoride.
You do know more than I do. You got an ear to the ground. You can hit the t-shirt store where t-shirts are not the only thing available. You can go to that's ifanboy.threadless.com. They have 7 designs up there right now. I really still really love the shower curtain idea, although I don't think my family will be down for the nothing makes sense, nothing matters shower curtain.
You should replace everything in your house possible with that and just turn it into the nihilist house.
Wow. And then everybody's like, why are we so sad? I don't know. You want to clean up the dishes? Why? It doesn't matter.
Nothing matters.
It makes sense that we do it. If all that's too much and you're like, hey, how can I throw a tip in the tip jar, just a little PayPal thing, you can go over to ifanboy.com/support where you can do that. And then also over there is ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you'll find links to buy the books that we talk about in Booksplodes. There's always going to be a link to the Pick of the Week comic in our post for this show. And, of course, there's a general link over to Amazon. And let's get back to comics.
You may have heard there was a movie that came out called Birds of Prey that bombed the box office. There's a tie-in book, obviously, called Harley Quinn and the Birds of Prey. Book one is from Black Label. And I was going to ignore it like I did the movie, but I saw it was Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor writing it, and Amanda Connor was drawing it.
That's not nothing.
I thought, well, that is not nothing. So I read it, and it was really fun. It's Black Label, so it's not in continuity. It's sort of in Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor's continuity from when they wrote Harley Quinn, but it's also sort of not. So it's very recognizable as that era of DC, but it's also Black Label, so there's lots of cursing, and there's some naked, a lot of naked people, but not nudity, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I got it.
In this issue, a bunch of thugs beat up her buddy who's from the old book that was running her building, and so she's going to exact revenge on these people who hurt him. And along the way, she runs into Power Girl, which Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor worked on, and the Birds of Prey gather sort of by accident. Superman makes an appearance. Honestly, this was a lot of fun. This was a lot of fun. This was probably up there for Pick of the Week.
Can I say, and you're not going to like this.
Yeah.
But I have seen so many mixed reviews on that movie.
Yeah.
That I can't figure out if it's like an unexpected delight or a complete mess, or that I think that maybe that depends on what you're expecting and what you want. And I am super curious to find out if you'd actually like it or not.
Me?
Yeah.
Well, we can wait for the home video release.
I know. I don't think you have to do a show about it or anything, but now I'm just curious, like, maybe, like, you know, because some movies, they market in a certain way, and it's completely different from what it is, and I don't know. I don't want to watch it.
I did the same thing with Suicide Squad. I watched it when it came out on Netflix. And
it lived up to your expectations, which were not good.
It exceeded them.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll find out.
I felt the same way about Aquaman, which you enjoyed a great deal more than I did, but I hated it. Right. But I was like, boy, all these people seem to like it, so maybe I'm wrong about it. And all of that's subjective.
So anyway, if you are interested, Amanda Connor never really does interiors, and this is a Black Label, so this is oversized 3 issues. So she's doing like a hell of a lot of interiors here. And it's a lot of fun. Neither Josh nor I like Harley Quinn as hero, but she's not really, at least in this issue, not really hero. It's that weird gray area she lives in, which is not great. But this is, you know, it's Black Label. It's out of continuity. It's fun. The art team is terrific. It's funny. It's a very funny book.
That's fair enough. Yeah.
Hey, did you think that maybe after however 80 years of Alfred being the father figure to Batman and team mother and all these things he's been doing for 80 years, that he would get the proper send-off at DC? No, he wouldn't. He would get a very mediocre one-shot issue in which the Bat family comes together to ostensibly to mourn Alfred, but really to just bicker amongst each other because that's all they do now.
I saw it and I thought, oh, poor Connor, he's going to have to feel the need to read this. And, you know, it's not the A-team.
It's not bad.
Some of the artists are.
Tinian IV and Tomasi, and then you've got Eddie Burroughs, Abra Ferrara, Chris Burnham, Marcio Takara, Diogenes Neves, David Lafuente, Sumit Kumar. And, you know, they're all fine. Some of them are better than others. You know, obviously the standout sequence is the Burnham sequence with Damian. Each of the main kids gets a sequence here where they remember something that Alfred did for them. Mm-hmm. And some of them work better than others. Jason's wearing, for some reason, 90s round sunglasses like Superboy, although I guess the 90s are back, so it makes sense, fashion-wise anyway.
Doesn't mean it's okay.
No, it's definitely not okay, but none of it's okay. And then David LaFuente does the sequence with Barbara. Those are the two standout art sequences.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, your thing. You just don't like it when the heroes just are angry with each other, and it's the same thing here. It's like everyone hates Bruce. It's stupid. They're all yelling at each other.
No, what you want to read is the family against the world.
Right.
And they don't tend to get there. Like, part of that is why, like, that's the fantasy, is that you've got a crew.
Right.
And they support you, and everybody comes after you, and you've got your people. There can be tension, or there can be stuff that goes up in there, but this is all it is.
And despite the fact that in his regular book, Dick Grayson has gotten his memories back, here he's still Rick Grayson, and there's an editor's note saying it takes place before that, and that's fine, but it's like, okay, at Alfred's funeral, you got this asshole named Rick who's like, I don't remember any of this shit, but I feel like I should be here, and I don't know any of you, and it's just like, ugh.
If there's any character that needs to be himself, you know, like, it should be Dick Grayson. We were just talking about this in the book Explode. You know, he's the heart of the thing. He's the guy that he's going to give you a chance to have a most genuine moment.
And to their credit, they do say at one point, I feel like I would have been the one who would have said the right thing and made everyone okay.
Uh-huh.
It's like, well, don't tell. I mean, you're not just twisting it. You're just twisting the knives.
Yeah.
So
I don't disagree. That feels like a waste.
It is.
It also lends credence, which is actually somewhat helpful, I think, in a way that this is bullshit.
It's all bullshit.
You know, if they made it really good, then it would feel less like bullshit, and then you wouldn't feel justified in thinking it was bullshit.
Right.
But it's bullshit.
They wrecked it. They wrecked it. They had the cure for cancer, and they lost it. They wrecked the buffet at the Harrow Club this morning. They did all these things.
We will refer to this tiny bit of the movie Medicine Man until the day we die. I don't think I've ever seen it. I don't think it was worth seeing or remembering, but he had the cure for cancer, and he lost it. And since then, I don't think it's odd that nobody's found it, but still.
Dollhouse Family, number 4. I'm still reading. Is this 4? It is 4. It's wrong in the script. It's 4, not 3. I really enjoy the modern day stuff a lot. The demon-y stuff, flashback-y stuff, I'm not as into.
I don't mind it because it is sort of a time and place that I think is kind of interesting, and it's not so overwhelming. But I like the idea, you know, they're telling the backstory at the same time. This is the parallel, sort of how we get there. Like, you got a little more about Cordwainer that I did not understand before.
Wait a minute. I'm looking at the cover now. In addition to Joe Hill House comics, now it says Black Label, DC Black Label on it. Did it always say that?
I feel like the Joe Hill comics are a subdivision of... Well, I can tell you right now. Let's see.
Last issue, we had the bomb go off in the bus with the mother and the daughter, and so this issue was the fallout of that. She's lost a leg. The daughter's lost an arm.
And those are, like, real consequences. Yeah. Again, like, anytime, you know, if you're doing the thing that is not the sort of ongoing comic book, you can have real consequences. And Carey's been really good at that with his sort of limited series. It is always said Black Label. Okay. Joe Hill. Yeah.
What great was that the dollhouse shows up and says, hey, to the mother, we'll give you your daughter's arm back, but you have to come live in the house.
Right.
And so then she's like, fuck that. And she leaves. And then the daughter, being a kid, being stupid, as all kids are, apparently agrees to the deal because the mother, in the middle of sex with the random guy she had the kid with in college, the leg comes back.
I like that guy came back and he was a good guy.
Yeah.
That really worked. I liked how absolutely angry the mom was after, you know, and then they actually talked about it. Mm-hmm. I thought that was all very realistic. I was freaked out by the fact that her bully was still in the house. And I was like, fuck, that's scary. Yeah.
No, this is good. This is legitimately good.
It was really good. I'm excited when I see that this book is coming out.
And we don't like horror 10 generally. And this is good horror.
It's so psychological. It's not about gore. It's not about, you know.
It's terror, especially from a parent's point of view, I'd imagine.
Yes, it's personal terror. It's personal terror.
Green Lantern Season 2, number 1, the newly shortened Season 2, originally solicited as 12 issues and now reduced to 8.
I think I'm okay with that.
I like this as a reset because I think the book got too weird and that last miniseries of the Black Stars didn't do anything for me. But here, you know, we're sort of resetting the table where the Guardians have left to go to the next plane, so they've got to find new Guardians at in the planet they come from, so... Hal is set to do that, and then the whole issue he's talking about, not the whole issue, but it's been coming up where he doesn't want to go back to Earth anymore. He likes being out in space, and here John Stewart and Jessica Cruz try to get him to come back to Earth, at least to come visit, and he won't do it. And then at the end, he, of course, gets reassigned by the new Guardians to Earth, and so he has to go back.
I think that's interesting. This also introduced a new concept which we've never had before, which is sexy Guardians. That's not a thing that happens a lot, but here we are. Like, there's only one Guardian left, which is kind of sexy.
But also the new ring, which can shrink people and devolve them. I don't know about that. That's a major shift in the Green Lantern.
Well, and of course, Grant Morrison.
It's also not going to show up anywhere else.
No, and that's fine.
I'm just continually impressed by Liam Sharp and how much, I don't say effort because everyone puts in effort, but how much goes into each page here. It really feels lived in and tactile, and it feels like they don't skimp on anything, and it does not look like any other comic book.
No, and not everybody can get away with what he's doing either, because, you know, that sort of level of detail can be lost. Detail's not even the right thing.
It's texture. There's a texture to everything.
Every time he draws a cityscape or something sort of huge, it's sort of always mind-blowing. There's just one tiny panel in this where you see Oa from overhead. Mm-hmm. It's a very small part of the page, but I was like, wow, that's good. And I was looking at it, and I couldn't even make out the bits of it, but it works as a drawing on its own. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm talking about? Like, I don't know, it's comic book impressionism or something, but it's super impressive for sure. And there's a lot of imagination going on, and I don't always enjoy it, but I'm very impressed by it. The crystal guy, you know, the way that it referred to himself and how he works. It was sci-fi and funny and kind of weird. And
you can totally jump on here. It's a number one. It's a resetting of the concept. You don't need to know anything that from the backstory is mentioned here. And he's going to Earth. So I loved the shot of him hitchhiking. It's like, here's Sad Sack Al again.
So here he goes.
I'm looking forward to the final 8 issues of the series before it all gets blown up. Those are the books we wanted to talk about. iFanboy.com is where you can talk about them, and Patreon.com/iFanboy is where you can go become a patron and vote to add a book to the rundown. This week we had three-way race, and the winner in the last moment was The Terrifics number 25 from Gene Yang and Dan Mora. Gene Luen Yang, terrific writer. I'm kind of surprised it's still going on. I'd read probably the first 10 issues of this book and then finally stopped reading it. It's the book that Jeff Lemire started. It was one of those ill-fated books from that line of comics that was supposed to focus on the artist, mm-hmm. when DC was sticking their thumb in Marvel's eye, which was stupid.
I wanted to like that book. I think I read the first issue and I was like, I'm not interested in this at all. I'm still waiting.
The artist was Ivan Reis, and you're not an Ivan Reis fan, so I can't see why. That this is DC's Fantastic Four with Mr. Terrific in the Mr. Fantastic role, Plastic Man in the stretchy role, and you have Phantom Lady as Invisible Woman, and then you have Metamorpho as the Thing character. Mm-hmm. It's sort of their Fantastic Four. And this issue was a Choose Your Own Adventure comic.
Yes, it was.
Did you do it? Did you make it to the end? Did you find the proper path?
I did. I was not entirely thrilled when I started reading this at about 12:45 last night. Well, I'll just knock this one out. And I was like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I was very excited to see Gene Yang's name on the front, for sure.
Yeah.
All right, that's great. But then, and then I was like, all right, well, let's see how this works. And it's not super fun on the digital reader.
No, it's
also
it's not.
Because the pages do not correspond to the page numbers on the page.
Right.
Which is sort of annoying. And there was a couple of times where I was like, I feel like I've done everything, but I can't find, I don't know how to get to the end of the story. It was like losing a video game over and over again.
Yeah, you had to go, there's four paths you could take for each character.
And then those also.
You had to go, ultimately you had to go through Phantom Lady's path, or Phantom Girl's path, but you had to go down Mr. Terrific's path to get a clue to help you make the right decision on Phantom Girl's path. Because at one point you hit a place where you had to choose between four things. And you had to either accidentally choose the right one, or Mr. Terrific's path gives you the clue to pick the right thing. And then it took me a while.
But also, that's not how Choose Your Own Adventure works. Your Own Adventure works where some of the stories end sooner, but some of them have different endings. And this was really like, you have to choose the right thing or you have to start over.
Right.
So here's my full sort of opinion on it, is that it was incredibly well done from a mechanical standpoint, mm-hmm. and thought out and really interesting and novel, and it wasn't that good. Meaning that, like, you know, you didn't have time to be with the characters and sort of learn anything about them, because it was all about the mechanisms.
Yeah, that's a gimmick.
More than it was about the story. You know, if I haven't read a book before, you know, really, or not keeping up with it, then, like, I want to have a chance to be wowed by the characters, by the interactions, a team book or whatever. And that just wasn't evident. And I thought, you know, when I saw, I like these characters, I like Gene Yang, when I saw it on the cover, I was like, oh, awesome. Like, I want to see what he does with them. And it was not that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that sort of, like, the continually, you know, stories concluded, start again on two. It's just like, it was that for 20 minutes. And I was like, ugh.
Two things. One, cover is not at all relevant to the story. The cover features all the characters in the DC universe. I thought they'd all show up at some point, but it didn't happen. And Dan Mora, the artist, is terrific. I think, like Otto Schmidt, he is one of the more exciting, newer artists. He's not new, but he is somewhat new to DC and Marvel, that type of work. And I think he's terrific. He used to draw a lot of stuff at Boom that we liked. Much like Otto Schmidt, you know, he doesn't skimp on stuff, and he's got a sort of a slightly cartoony style, but still realistic. It's a look I really like a lot.
They colored really well here, too.
Yeah. It's Ivan Plasencia.
Yeah. It was the right palette for this, for sure.
I mean, I had fun. I had fun with it. It was impressive.
Yeah.
I wouldn't want to read this all the time or ever again, maybe, but it was a fun experiment, and I was impressed by the amount of thought that had to go into it. And
yes.
And it's not something I'd seen before in a comic like this, so I thought it was novel. Let's do ratings.
Ratings.
I'm going to give it 4 out of 5. I feel like you're in the 2 range.
I mean, there's really 2 sort of paths here. I mean, it's an A for effort, for sure. But did it connect with me on a sort of level that I want? No. 2.75.
Okay. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go and you can vote to add a book to the rundown. And anyone who's a patron can do that. But if you're a patron at the $5 or higher level, you can get your own superpower live on the show, as these 4 are about to.
It's one of those weeks that I just realized, it's like, oh, I have to do patron powers. Yeah. So that's where we are. Brian Morgan, in his head, resides a full game guide and cheat sheet to every video game ever. Don't know how it's there, but anyone who knows the feeling of endlessly not being able to get past a certain point would appreciate something like that. Oh, no, you got to look. It's hidden. It's around the corner. Goddamn Easter eggs. How are you supposed to find those?
Right.
If you don't know. I don't understand. You know, not a problem for Brian, or, you know, if you're lucky enough to be one of Brian's friends.
Right.
Uh-huh. That's what he does.
Any platform? Any?
He's a universal gamer guide.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
I see. James Fletcher can hold the piece of paper and micro shred it. So you hand him a piece of paper and it'll just be micro shredded.
That seems useful.
Yeah.
On the other hand, we have a shredder upstairs. I haven't fired that bastard up in a while.
It's very satisfying.
Yeah. No, it is. It's loud. And I'm always like, I'll just throw it away and take my chances.
Jesus.
Well, I mean, the fact is, I would say once a year I have to get a new debit card because some huge corporation has lost it. So they're not looking for me. They're going for the big score.
James Fletcher can also shred credit cards.
That's nice. Yeah. That's the one, like, you're like, I'm not using this card anymore, and just sits on my desk for 3 years. Literally, the machine is 8 feet away. I just got to plug it in.
Wow, that's a new low, Josh.
Well, there's a lot going on. You got to prioritize. Yeah. Philip Knight Scott has the ability to turn any cardboard tube into an actual effective sword.
Like mage.
Sort of, but it's not a magic base. I mean, it's still shaped. That's true. It's still shaped, you know, like a cardboard tube. It doesn't glow or anything, but the way that it acts is like a full-on sort of metal-edged sword in that way, which, you know, awesome to take on planes if you need a sword. I mean, like, he's a good guy, so you don't have to.
Yeah.
Or when he arrives at his destination, he can just go to a dollar store and get some cheap gift wrap. It's a sword.
West born, east bred.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know how people tend to communicate with GIFs or GIFs?
It's GIF.
Yeah.
Sure. It is not GIF.
Not according to the person who created them.
Listen, I've seen memes saying both things.
West born, east bred turns into he turns into that. Or she or they turn into the GIF to respond to something. So if you say something and they want to post the Picard holding his head face, he actually, she, they turn into the Picard for a second.
It's like, does the background also exist in that instance?
No, just the actual.
Okay.
It's almost like the next evolutionary step in which we speak only in these images. He becomes the image or she or they to communicate.
That's good. I like that. Can we take a moment?
Yeah.
Can we talk about GIFs for a moment?
We can.
Just a moment.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, I know that I'm a grumpy old man who hates things that are new and different, and I love them. I'm a big fan because my head is unfortunately a repository for a billion responses that all have to do with movies and television programs which I've watched.
Right.
And for a long time, you'd have to say it, and then sometimes you'd have to explain it, which is not good. And then for a little while, you could do it with YouTube. This is a shortcut to that.
Oh, no, we use them all the time in our iFanboy.
Yes. However, I actually wrote this on the social media earlier this week. I have no problems with millennials as a group, but their database of references is sorely lacking.
It's shallow.
It is. It does not have many of the touch points that I need. And the ones that do go back far enough, say your 70s movies, your whatever, it's always the most obvious one. When you talk about Jaws, somebody says, need a bigger boat. So that's the only thing there, where there are a million little bits from that that I want to use, and I can't ever find it.
Sounds like you should be uploading stuff to Giphy more.
It's Giphy. Uh-huh. And I'm not going to stick on that. I'm not going to stick on that point. And then the other thing I would like to say, if I could go so bold, stop using the same damn ones all the time. They're cliches. It's not interesting. Homer backing into a bush is played out. Michael Jackson eating popcorn, it's over.
Right.
Find something else. But it seems like there's a lot, depending on who you are, you can find your thing. I will not use a GIF if I do not know the source where it comes from. Hmm. Some random dude making a face, even if that face is funny, I don't know what I'm saying. I don't know who that is. I don't know what I'm supporting. I won't do it.
Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go support the show.
You just Homer backed away from my ass.
And help keep the lights on and get your own superpower live on the show. Let's do the quick email. They're both quick emails. Okay. Greg B. from Oakland, California. Upon reading X-Men number 6 this week, I'm getting that old hide your cat feeling, and the characters I've been reading for over 30 years are acting like jerks. Time to send in the Avengers. What was the last comic book run or storyline you had that you had to drop due to poor character betrayals? Sorry, portrayals.
Betrayals and portrayals. That's a nice little bit of...
It's a nice little
I'm going to give
writing.
You credit for that. Yeah.
Similar to what you were talking about earlier with Hawkeye.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you would consider in this vein?
It is. However, in both of the instances, in the main, the good ones. So we'll talk about Fraction, Aja, and this new one, this Matthew Rosenberg and Otto Schmidt version. It's true that I didn't like the way the characters were portrayed, but it was so good that we were like, well, it's still really good. It's worth reading in that way. And I'm trying to think of a version of, I mean, really, like, it's not a comic book, but the one I am most upset about is still Hawkeye in the movies. I hate it.
Right. But it didn't keep you from seeing them. So he's asking if there's anything, did you ever drop something?
I mean, I'm positive. I'm sure a lot of comics I've dropped, but I don't feel super. See, the thing is, I don't know that I feel super upset about it. I tend to drop a book for any reason.
Right.
You know, I'm trying to think of a specific reason where that was the case. Maybe you have an example.
I mean, it's tough because, you think I would have dropped Nightwing, or I wouldn't even call dropping Thor, because when they're changing characters, it's not the same thing as changing the portrayal of a character.
Although I feel like that's in the same family.
It's adjacent. It's definitely adjacent.
If there's I hate to keep going back to Hawkeye, but like if there's a book where, you know, Kate Bishop is the main character, I'm less interested in that. Especially if, no, not especially if, I'll take that back.
When they swap out the main characters, when I tend to get, I didn't read Hydra Cat because of the portrayal. I didn't read it because I didn't like the sensibility that Nick Spencer brought to Captain America, which I guess is similar, in a similar vein.
Well,
I wasn't upset because of Hydra Cap, because we all knew it wasn't really Captain America.
Yes, exactly. The Captain America in it, the actual Steve Rogers in it, was, you know, on message.
Yeah. I didn't think Spencer's sensibility fit Captain America. It fits perfectly with Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. I just didn't think it fit Cap. That's why I didn't read that book.
You know, what's interesting is that I feel like I have an easier time thinking of stories that have a different portrayal of characters that I liked. Mm-hmm. The other thing that happens, too, is that you've got portrayals of characters where they haven't figured out what it's supposed to be. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's been a lot of Green Lantern like that. For a long time, people just couldn't figure out Hal Jordan. I've definitely not read books because the Wonder Woman version isn't interesting. We talked about this last week or a couple weeks ago when they did the Wonder Woman special that we read.
Yeah, that's an adjacent problem. I mean, I think the specific problem he's asking about is tough.
I know. I'm getting as close to as I can.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I'm trying to think. I guarantee that you have read a Martian Manhunter where you're like, that's not right. Or Hawkman or Doctor Strange. I can't think of the specific examples, though. But those sort of edge characters, you know, that don't get used all the time. And I know that there are people who actually also, you know, will read Batman from different places. Go, Batman wouldn't do this. But we've also given Batman a lot of flexibility. Like, there's lots of Batmans you can have.
We all have an idea in our head of what our favorite character should act and be like, and they don't always fit that. So we're all constantly dealing with that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't know that I can think of a book that I dropped because of that, because usually that's a symptom of something else. Like, I have not read a lot of Damian Wayne stuff because I
just don't like the character, though.
I know, but like initially, Grant Morrison's portrayal was fun. It was interesting, and then like the next thing that comes along is you know Peter Tomasi's version, which isn't even as like he was annoying to begin with, and then this is even worse.
Right.
You know that it's like they missed it, even the part that was interesting about that character. And I don't mean to come down on Tomasi because he did it for a long time and he owns it, but I didn't like it.
I'm sure there's an instance in our show's history and our reading history in which we have done this, but I can't think of one. It doesn't mean it doesn't exist. I just can't think of what it is.
I feel like it's part and parcel of a whole thing. If it's part of what makes you not want to read a book. But no, I can't. You guys should weigh in on this. I'm sure there's things that we're missing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's been outrage that we've dropped the book. Let's squeeze the last one in. Carl C. I've been getting into running. This led me to wonder, without accessing the Speed Force, could Barry Allen run a full marathon, and how do you think he would finish?
That's a good question.
No.
Really?
No, I think the Speed Force is a crutch in uh-huh. terms of running. The Speed Force allows him to run really fast. The Speed Force gives him the super metabolism. He doesn't have to go out there and train. He can just do it. So if you take that ability away, he's back to being normal Barry Allen. He can't run.
Well, he is all muscly and everything, so that indicates a certain level of fitness.
It doesn't mean running fitness, though. That's a whole other
yeah. kind of
fit. That's a whole other deal.
Yeah, but does he go lift weights or something? How does he get like that? Is it the metabolism?
He's got to have to train running-wise. That's weights would be useless.
Right.
I have a couple of friends who run marathons, and my brother-in-law, he ran the New York City Marathon this year. It's a whole other thing to do, and you have to – you couldn't just – put a random person into the marathon and have them run. I mean, they could try, but they wouldn't finish.
Maybe he's asking if the Speed Force was gone, is there any, maybe if there's residual
right. fitness? My take is no. Well, the Speed Force is what allows him to run fast and allows him to have the right. metabolism. And if he doesn't have that, then...
So you're saying he doesn't even have a natural aptitude for that?
No, not at all. That's what I'm saying. Because he used to be slow and late all the time. That was his character.
But it wasn't like a fat dude.
I'm relatively fit. Now, I've been relatively fit before, and I couldn't run a marathon.
Well,
because I never trained for a marathon. It's a very specific skill.
You're a collection of loosely connected parts at this point.
That's true.
I mean, I've never been able to run in my life. Like, I hear people talk about runner high the same way that they would talk, like, that, you know, like a Ouija board or a psychic. I'm like, whatever. That's not a real thing.
It's not like Barry Allen was a runner and then got the flash powers. He was just a regular dude and then he got the flash powers.
Was he on like track in high school?
No. None of that stuff. So if you took away Superman's strength, it's not like he could still lift a car over his head. The strength was what allows him to do that in the same way that the Speed Force is what allows Barry to run.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a regular dude. A regular dude.
Well, with abs.
Well, that's because he's a comic book character.
That's true.
Go look at the Carmine Infantino stuff. He didn't have abs.
Well, they didn't have the kind of fabric to show that at the
right,
time.
Right. It was heavy burlap.
That's I was gonna say wool, but burlap is a funnier word.
Canvas.
That would chafe.
Yeah, all of it would
chafe. That would chafe so badly. They coated the inside with talcum powder because that was the best they had.
And then all got cancer. Contact@iFanboy.com.
Wait, is talcum powder carcinogenic now?
Baby powder.
Ah, shit. Gold bond's okay though, right?
I think so. I don't know.
You know what's funny is that I was thinking to myself earlier is that there's like two things I couldn't live without, and one of them is the heartburn medicine, and then the other thing is Gold Bond, but they took the heartburn medicine off the shelves because it's carcinogenic now. So it's like, don't take Gold Bond away from me.
That's sad, Josh. That might be the saddest thing you've ever said in the show.
Well, I mean, we all make choices, and unfortunately too often my choice is pizza.
Let's talk about upcoming shows or shows we just have out.
We just talked about Hawkeye Freefall, and I spoke with the writer of that and many other fine comic books, Matthew Rosenberg. As soon as we are done with this, I'm going to reach out to the person who I've already pre-qualified to do the next show, and I'm going to set up a time record that show.
You sent them the questionnaire. They filled it out. They answered it.
No, no. What I do is I say, hey, I don't know if you know who I am,
uh-huh.
and if you don't, that's fine. Would you want to come on my show? And then if I have to, I make an apology for the name iFanboy. And then usually I assume I end up in a spam filter or they just, you know, they decide not to.
Right.
Sometimes I write back right away and that's great.
So there's no questionnaire involved?
There's not. No, I don't even write. I don't prepare in any way.
I see. All right. Well, he's got another one. And then if you look right behind this show in the feed, you'll find Booksplode, Batman by Neil Adams, Book 3. The Booksplode show that we do every other month. And this, we talked about Neil Adams' work. from the 70s, the recoloring, the modern recoloring. We went down a couple of rabbit holes, which was fun.
Sure.
It was a fun show. I liked it.
Where are the prices?
That's another weird.
I thought that was a 20-minute go. I was like, this is not going to last. Turns out that's never the case.
42 minutes.
Yeah, not bad.
So it's a fun show. Check it out right behind us on the feed. Also, as we've mentioned before, you can vote for the Tripwire Awards, which is UK Comic Book Awards. It's open to voting for anyone. There's a link on our show notes to do so. And I ask if you would consider voting for Bill Sienkiewicz Revolution Volume 1 in the Best Collection category. It's a book I worked on last year. I'm very proud of. And the awards voting is still open. You can vote for any award in the awards. And I would appreciate it if you would consider the vote. And thank you all who do.
Is this like a six-month voting thing?
I'm going to look into what it is. But, you know, I gotta get the tin can out.
I'm just asking.
Selling my pencils.
Get over to ifanboy.com. You can find all of our podcasts. You can find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out over on facebook.com/ifanboy or at ifanboy on Twitter, or following at ifanboycomics on Instagram, where we will also put best of the week in the panels, which was a thing we used to do regularly on the old website back when that was a thing. Yep. You can follow us individually at CS Kilpatrick and at J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. If you dig, oh, that's your part.
That's right.
I'm going.
Keep going.
I'm going.
Push through.
You like this show? Write a review of it. Write a review or leave a star rating for any show that you really like. That helps all of them. So if you've done this one already, go do it for a different one that you love. I am a little behind on that. I need to catch up on some of the things I've added. Although I feel like I've been listening to every podcast I've been listening to for about 10 years now. So I've added a couple, and I hate dropping them. It's hard to drop, but you got to move on sometimes.
Feel guilty.
Yep. I mean, don't drop this.
We didn't even talk about The Amazing Spider-Man this week in which J. Jonah Jameson had a podcast.
Yeah.
I actually meant to put that on the list, but that was, I felt very attacked there.
Yeah, that's true. Better yet, tell your friends about it or post on social, whatever it is. Get the word out. We always appreciate that. And that will do for this show. It is not an hour and 40 minutes long, so that's something.
And that's it. We're done. I'm Connor.
I'm Josh.